Right, okay. We're on chapter 27, and it's page 119 and 120 at the bottom, so that you have the page number. And we are beginning five lines up from the bottom in the Hebrew, Vezesh Amru Razal, and this is what the sages said. Page 119, 120. We're in chapter 27 of the first part of Tanya.
I'm listening.
And we're just at the very last part of it. Right? V'zesh Omru Razal. This is what the sages said. Odom Mekadesh Atzmoy Ma'at Lamata. If a person... Do you see where it is?
Okay, just
have you got page 120 at the bottom?
Yes.
Right, okay. So it begins over there. Five lines up. It's like a little abbreviation. Vezesh Vav Zayin Shin.
Yeah, I think I've got
that's it. That's it, right. Vezesh Omer Razal, that is what the sages said. Odom Makadish Atzmoy Ma'at Lamato, a person, the human being, sanctifies himself or herself a little bit here below in this world. We make a little step. Makadshin. Susan. Yeah, okay. Yes, sorry. Yeah, that's fine.
Is that better?
Yeah, come a bit closer. Right, okay, love it. A person makes a little step towards Hashem. Makadshin oisoi harbe milamailo. The person is sanctified a lot by Hashem from above. So, in other words, we make a little step forward in some way. And what he's been speaking about in the previous few lines, certain aspects of self-restraint. You see, there are things which are forbidden, and then there are things which are permitted. But it doesn't mean that we have to do everything that is permitted in the sense of completely indulging ourselves in this direction and in that direction, because there's a quest to have a sort of a more spiritual perspective on life. Now, it's true that we have the duty to be a human being who is living here in the world, relating to the world, being part of the world. We're not trying to go away and live in caves in the mountains or something like that and say that we're going to try and be holy. All those people down there in the city, they are very impious. No, we're not saying that. We're also going to live in the city. And we're also going to be taking part in all the material aspects of life. But we will be aware, that there is more to life than the material dimension of things. I remember once that I was driving my car, and you know, these streets around here are very narrow, and I was trying to, there were cars parked on either side of the road, and there was another car that was trying to go this way, and I was trying to go that way. And our cars were very close together. And the person in the other car was also a Jewish person with a beard. And there we are, both trying to maneuver our cars so that we don't scrape against each other. And he suddenly turned to me, like through the window, he said, "And if we do scrape the cars, you know, so what?" You know, neither of us were driving cars that, you know, one scratch costs £10,000. That's, yes, so what? You have to see it in proportion.
It means you're both on the same wavelength.
That's right.
In proportion.
Yes, you have to see, it in proportion. What is it that really matters in the world?
Sometimes you get the other one that's underspout and he won't say it. You know what I mean?
This way
you're 100% right, Rini, and that's another chapter of Tanya. What do you do when you're dealing with that kind of
stuff? And he may be a very, very Torah book a person and all. And still he won't give way.
You're thinking.
Driving manners are.
Driving manners are very, can be really a different person behind that wheel.
Yeah, that's a great test of
it's a
the
big
person's
test of a person's character, you know.
It says in Pirkei Avot, in Ethics of the Fathers, it says, how do you know what a person's character is really like? Bekisoi, with his purse. Bekoisoi, when he gets drunk. Or Bekasoi, and when he gets angry.
Oh.
Then the sort of the person really comes out.
Oh.
But I think that maybe we'll have to add another dimension when he's driving, you know.
Would you go by anger in a person? Is that their whole character? Or?
Well, people are suspected that when they get angry and they say something, that's what they've been thinking about all the time.
Really?
You know. Now, the problem is that actually that's not the real person. It's part of the person. We all have within us here. We all have within us a ferocious animal soul. Now, some people, the animal soul is a gentle animal soul, like a little lamb. They wouldn't say boo to a goose. I'm not quite sure how lambs and geese get on together, but I could well imagine a goose fluttering along and the lambs running away from it.
A little lamb can be a tiger.
Or, yes, well, that's the thing. Because one can...
Not pushed maybe to the limit, and then you can see the...
And suddenly they turn into something else. Yes, that's also that's also a situation.
Push somebody enough to the limit, they'll...
Yeah, they'll be... they'll go from being a little lamb to a tiger. Yeah. That's... well, you see, that's the thing. When one does get angry... we're not allowed to get angry if we can possibly avoid it.
We're allowed to feel angry.
Well, now this is an interesting thing, because sometimes the therapeutic cure for certain situations is that the person feels anger, or that's what we're told by therapists. Mm. And I'm not sure about
feel that. Angry about something that happened, but you don't have to act out.
Get a punch ball, but often you do.
Well, it's an interesting issue. I mean, for years, my close friends of mine who are therapists, this is one of the points that we disagree about, because I believe that anger feeds on itself, and the more a person feels angry about something that happened in the past, or something their parents did to them, or someone did to them, or some situation that they had. In fact, this reminds me of a story which, when I heard it, moved me very much. It's a story told by a rabbi who lived in Antwerp. This second, I can't remember his name. I'm sure Mrs. Safran would remember his family. And he came and visited this country. Lubavitcher Chassid, who came and visited here, and Rabbi Lieberman. No, it wasn't Rabbi Lieberman. And he told a story about a person who'd had an extremely unhappy life. He was a child during the war, and then he had unfortunately lost everyone, and after the war, and so it was ghastly, absolutely horrific, the war. Then the war ended, thank God, and he was living in France in some kind of village, and there was a woman who began looking after him and taking care of him, and I think she was a Jewish woman, and she was he was a Jewish boy, and he formed a great attachment to her, and she was like his mother, his second mother, his own mother and father having died, unfortunately. And then, for some reason, she couldn't look after him anymore, and he had to be sent away from her. And it was like bitterness upon bitterness. And life went on, and he grew older, and he made contact. Somehow he met other people from the Jewish community in France or somewhere, and he began to become more religious, and life went on, and he studied a bit. Somehow he went to a yeshiva, and he came out like quite a normal Orthodox Jew, quite knowledgeable. And then he met a Chabad rabbi, a Lubavitch rabbi, and he began studying with him, and he began learning Tanya and Hasidic teachings, and maybe he went to visit the Rebbe, something like that, and eventually got married, and life. So, but when he'd met this this Lubavitch rabbi, he was already 21, 22. He was already a mature person. So someone once met him and said to him, "Tell me, what was the difference for you? You anyway were an Orthodox Jew. What was the difference? You were an Orthodox Jew. You kept Shabbat. You kept Kashrut. Then you met this Lubavitch teacher, and you became you began learning Tanya. You went to the Lubavitch rabbi. What difference did it make in your life?" He said, "I tell you what difference it made in my life. I was an Orthodox Jew beforehand, and I was an Orthodox Jew after. But before I met that man, I was very, very unhappy about my life. I had had a very miserable life. And then I began learning Tanya, and I went to visit the Lubavitch Rebbe, and this happened and that. I stopped being miserable about my life. I stopped being miserable."
How?
Because he felt this is what Hashem is giving me. One person might be given £1,000,000 and a beautiful home and everything wonderful and good health and a spouse and children and grandchildren, this, that, the other. And another one, unfortunately, is not given that and has pain and problems and difficulties and battles and struggles with the people around them. They have to go to court cases, and it goes on for years and years. But God is giving each person, you know, that's like, to use the metaphor from cards, you know, that's the hand you get. That's the, and that's what you have to play with. You know, and the good player is not assessed, the good bridge player, if I can use this metaphor, is not assessed because they get good cards. It's what they do with the cards that they've got. and it's that ability to play the hand whichever way it is, that's really, you know, in a way, that's the skill. Now, it's not very easy, and we can ask a blessing from Hashem that we should be able to cope with the, what's called in Yiddish, the pekel. That means the packet of suffering, problems, difficulties, challenges, however we want to look at it. And there's a famous story that in some kind of like spiritual realm, there were a whole lot of people, and they each had their pekel. They had their knapsack of problems, and they were asked to put your knapsack of problems, put your pekel of problems on the table. And they all put their problems on the table so you could see what they all were. Somehow it was like a transparent bag, and you can see inside it what it was. And then they were told, "Now you can all pick up any bag you want." And everyone looks around at the table. There was the rich man's bag, there was this one's bag, there was the rabbi's bag. "You know what? I prefer my own bag." And each one and each one took back their own pekel. That's right. That's right. So that's when there are challenges. That's the other page of Tanya. That's the page where there are challenges. Here we're on a page, this is the end of chapter 27, where we're talking about a person who at this situation, he has the opportunity to make some sort of little spiritual step in some way, and he does so, or she does so, and there is a response from above. And that interesting way in which a little step that a person makes in this world, there is a spiritual response from above. So the example he gave before, earlier, that we learned last week, a person wants to say something. We're not talking about something really negative, not Lashon Hara. We're not talking about it really being a thing forbidden by the Torah, but somehow it's not totally, totally appropriate. And a person is able to restrain themselves. That little bit of restraint gets a response from Hashem. That's what it's saying here. Levad Masha Akayim, apart from the fact that the person is keeping a mitzvah Saseh Shel Torah, a positive mitzvah of the Torah, v'hiskadishtem v'yisim kadoshim. You should sanctify yourselves, and when you do that, you will be holy. In other words, by us, trying a little bit to sanctify ourselves a little bit, we make a step forward and we receive something positive from above. When he expresses some sort of self-restraint concerning all the different realms that are permitted, upirish, and the meaning of the word v'hiskadishtim, you should make yourself holy, shetasu atzmachem kadoshim, you should make yourself, that's what it's saying, a little bit holy, koloima, that means afshe be'emes einu kadosh u'muvdil mesitra achra. Even though the person, in fact, see, this is very interesting. You know, where are we really? Is the person who's lost his temper, is that the real person? Is the person who's trying to be a little bit more spiritual, a little bit more giving, a little bit more loving, is that the real person? Which one is the sham? Which one is the sham?
The first one.
Well, that's a very good point.
Psychologists always say people are a mixture.
Yes, that's exactly it. I mean,
bad in everybody. You know, I mean, most people have their good points. Most people have their bad points. Doctor, no. I mean, there's not one human being I wouldn't on earth that hasn't got their bad points, but they've got their good points as well.
That's it. And Rabbi Mendel Fulofas, a great teacher. Mm-hmm. He used to say exactly what you're saying, Susan. And he would say the trick is that when you are relating to another person, look at their good points.
That's Hasidic thinking, isn't it?
Focus on the good point of the other person. Mm. Focus on the positive aspect.
Not easy when you're angry.
You're right.
No one guarantees us an easy life.
But you know, you don't have to be angry to make a point, do you?
No. That's.
I mean, you can make a positive point, and sometimes
there's a difference
very, very severe about it. Yeah. But you've not really lost it.
Mm. You're quite right. There's a big difference between being assertive losing one's temper.
Is that now an avara to be assertive?
No. Mm. No, in fact, it may often be exactly the right thing to do.
But many people aren't.
Well, there are times when it's right to be assertive.
I know, but a lot of people are either this or that, passive or aggressive.
The Rebbe once spoke about this. You see, in Chabad, there's the whole idea of selflessness and bittul, that means self-abnegation. The Rebbe said, it doesn't mean you become a doorstep to be trampled on.
That's right. Nobody likes that.
You may have to be very, very strong and very, very firm and very, very insistent. Mm. And that is the way you will move things in the right way. And you know that you're doing something which is good for the person you're dealing with.
I'm sorry, but I forgot to put it on. I just didn't do it, I forgot. Short-term memory. Sorry.
I didn't know you were a boss of a dam, but.
Yeah.
Sorry to disturb you.
Oh. Okay.
I mean, what's the difference between being aggressive?
What's the difference between being assertive and being aggressive?
Yes. I know.
Because very often the two can be mistaken. Well,
have you got a good definition, Tala?
I'll tell you something.
It's how you get your point over. Some people shout and rave and scream and everything to get a point. Some people just sit down and just talk to you and calmly. They'll do the same thing.
Can I say something?
I don't
know whether that makes sense.
Okay.
This whole court case
is about
they're all saying that I'm being rude to them, right?
The thing is, people are not rational beings. And so there, it's like holding a match, and you've got a whole lot of crumpled up newspaper there, and some of it's even got petrol sprinkled on it. You know, so you just have to be extremely, extremely careful. In general, you know, the subtlety of people's whole structure and feelings, and the chaos that has been in their lives, and then the fact now you're encountering them in some way, or they're encountering you. That's
very complex.
So he's keeping the positive mitzvah of the Torah, making sanctifying oneself, and through some kind of self-restraint, the appropriate kind of self-restraint, that also has to be appropriate. What one should be careful about also sometimes would need discussion. You know, you can have a person going over the top in all kinds of different ways. So we can go over the top in our lust for the material world, and we can go over the top in our lust for ascetic spiritual life. You know, so you just have to balance it very carefully, and that's why there are books and there are teachings and teachers and guides and so on in order to try to get it right. And so even though the person in themselves actually likes, wants this thing, whatever it is, kihi betokfa uvigvurasa, over the page now, because the strength of desire within the person for materiality is just as strong kusoldosa as it ever was. Bechala lasmoli, in the left hand part of the heart. But the thing is that the person suppresses this this desire and just keeps it a little bit more in control. And then, because you make this step below, the Torah tells us, because we make this step, we become a little bit more holy. That means, in fact, eventually, we will actually become a little bit more detached from that kind of material dimension, through the fact that spiritually we get an input from heaven, and we are helped to drive away this sense of the negativity that's driven away little by little. Now that's like a very spiritual picture. You have the spiritual picture of a person who is striving to become more real, more sincere, more emistic, more truthful, more consistent than they are. And there are little chunks of inconsistency within them, but they are going to try and align themselves with the more spiritual dimension that is there. And one of the teachings of Tanya is that although we can have all kinds of raging negative forces inside us, we do also have a very spiritual, sacred dimension as well. And what he's advising us to do is align ourselves with that sacred, spiritual dimension, and not to get depressed at seeing the animal side to ourselves, which rears itself up in various ways in our life. And so here it's saying that we can actually train ourselves to go beyond the animal negative side to ourselves. But I would like to suggest that although he says this so positively and confidently, it's a long job. And we may not actually we may not actually achieve it.
A long journey.
And he says elsewhere it may not work. As he said earlier in this chapter, you know, what's gonna happen to the person who never actually achieves any seemingly never achieves a single step forward? You see, here at the end of the chapter, he's saying, you know what, you know, you might achieve a little step forward. But in the middle of the chapter, earlier on, he said there are people who spend their whole lives struggling, and they get to 119 and 11 months and 28 days, and they're still struggling. They're still struggling.
Isn't it a lot to do with people as well in this life? You've got to take chances. Sometimes you have to push forward, take chances as well.
That's a beautiful idea, Susan. You know, and that's true.
Because people say, well, you know, this never works, that never works. But try something else. Try something. If it doesn't work, you haven't lost anything.
Try something else.
Does that make sense?
Try a different way.
You don't succeed.
That's right. You know, I mean, this way doesn't work. Try it that way.
Yes, she's right.
Well, I think at some point...
You know, try it that way.
I think at some point you have to...
If it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
But try
it.
Let go.
Try it.
I think at some point you do have to let go. You can't be a Rottweiler with a bone and you...
Let go and let God.
And it's not doing you any good. It isn't doing anybody else any good. And it doesn't make sense.
That's the way I
look at it. Let go and let go.
I think that's
how you've got to try.
You say you get a massive reward for every little push you
have. Yes, absolutely.
Do you? Millimeter you push it, there's a massive reward.
Do you think so? Yes.
And then you go back again a bit.
Even though we go back again.
No, not necessarily.
Even though we go back again, the fact that we have that challenge and at that moment we dealt with it, that's a positive thing.
You mean saying sorry quicker than you would before and not bearing any animosity like you would before?
All right.
Okay. Or you don't mean that?
Well, it could be
and
that.
You will go forward.
That,
it's amazing.
There are a million examples. That's a perfectly reasonable example.
You're not going to go forward.
But it is a bit disheartening when one goes back. But that's human life, I suppose, isn't it? That's life.
Each day is a new creation. And the same way it's a new beginning.
Good luck.
Good luck. All the very best.
Burden yourself more.
All the very best.
May the Almighty help you.
It's all to do with the ego.
Help from heaven.
Very hard. 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 Very hard